Hi there. You're listening to the Nuin Podcast, where we dive into the fashion world, take its seams apart, and look at the truths behind it.
I moved here to study fashion.
Join us every month to explore ethical fashion, from the workers who made your clothes to new materials, fashion's environmental impact, sustainable style, and much, much more.
Hi there. On this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to Moita Tsupan. She's the founder and CEO of Planet Care, a company dedicated to developing a solution to help stop the release of microplastics into our oceans. Our talk comes at a very interesting time to me because, I'm very fortunate to live near the beach, and for about 2 months, I've been going there with friends and actually the local community to kind of do a cleanup of the beach because, unfortunately, a while back we had some storms and a lot of the trash junk that just went first into the river then got dumped into the sea, and it's all around the beach. And we've been going there to do cleanups. And
where exactly is that? Where are you located?
In Portugal, Porto.
Oh, that's such a beautiful city. Actually, one of my best friends in Slovenia is from Porto, but she's been living here for 20 years. She's married a Slovene guy, and she has 3 kids, but we're really good friends.
Oh, that's so nice. And we've been going there, and the thing is, we can collect a lot of shoe soles and, of course, plastic bottles and these also big containers, like plastic containers, and also a lot of foam from insulation, from building insulation. And a lot of that foam, you can find it in very different sizes. And sometimes I find it in tiny, tiny bits. And I keep going back to microplastics and how we can easily catch those bottles, those plastic bottles. But then I find myself thinking, what happens when all of this disintegrates and we cannot catch them, right?
And exactly. You hit a very important point. Because with large plastics, we have a theoretical chance of, you know, removing it. But with microplastics, it's really either you stop it and prevent the release or they're there forever. I mean, there's no way of retrieving them back from the ocean. So I think they're a really dangerous problem. And, you know, prevention is such an important step. It's the only step with microplastics, really.
And that's why I wanted to start by asking if you could talk a little bit about what are microplastics, what are its major sources, and if it's actually correct to say that the fashion industry is one of the biggest contributors to the release of microplastics.
Let's ask what are microplastics. So basically, microplastics are anything the size of 5 millimeters up down to 1 micron, right? Everything so dead, so we talk about nanoplastics. And then microfibers, the problem we're really dealing with, are a subgroup of microplastics. They're basically microplastics, but they're different in shape. You can imagine them as little cuts of spaghetti, which are highly mobile because they can swim everywhere with the ocean current. They're a very mobile form of microplastics. And when you say a fashion industry is a huge polluter, yes, of course it is. And the study shows that 1/3, so 30% of all microplastics found in our oceans are actually microfibers coming from your clothes. But the number one source of microplastic would still be abrading from tires, from vehicle tires. So that would be the number one source. And then the number two major source would be microfibers coming from textiles.
Wow, that gets me thinking, how could we substitute tires, you know, the material?
Yeah. Good one. There's actually, I don't know from the top of my head, I don't know the startup, but there's actually a UK-based startup that is dealing exactly with that problem. And I know they have some solution in terms of filtering filters on tires, but I don't really follow them that diligently, but maybe I can look it up and then I can I can send you the link. Maybe you wanna interview them sometime.
Nice. I have to search that. I had no idea something like that existed.
Because with your technology, even things that are completely bizarre are possible. So I'll send you a link.
And can you talk a little bit about the impacts of microplastics? Why is it so important for us to stop them from getting into our oceans?
Well, because microplastics are often substituted for food by many, many marine organisms. And through the food chain, they actually end up on our plates in our bodies. And of course, they are not a very good source of food. They have no calories. They absorb chemical pollutants. They soak up all other chemical pollutants. And also, they're also shed the material, they're made from, like their own plastic. So they're not very healthy for us, nor are they healthy for the marine organisms. And that shows in, lack of reproduction, early death, and the early effects on human health are quite alarming. They have been found in human placentas, in human milk, in human blood. We have them everywhere. Microplastics are in everything you eat and drink. I mean, if you use salt today, they have microplastics in you right now. And the effects on the human body and the diseases caused, the research is only now starting to emerge, but it's alarming. And I think we'll see the consequences in the next 20 years, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, it's scary. I also read that, as you were saying, that microplastics have been found on placenta, and I think also at the top of Mount Everest. And I was like, how is this?
Definitely, they have been found on the top of highest mountains, but what's maybe even more alarming is, imagine the piece of your sweater was found in the stomach of a crab 11 kilometers deep in the ocean in the Mariana Trench. So if you go 11 kilometers deep and you find a new crab and then a piece of your clothing in him, then you can imagine how mobile these fibers are and how, they're really everywhere.
Yeah, it's scary. It's daunting to think of how we don't even think about it when we wear clothes, the impact that just washing an item can get so far away from us.
Exactly, you think it's far away, but it's there and it's coming from your washing machines.
I'd love for you to talk a little bit on how did Planet Care come about, because I've heard a little bit about your story and I find it really great. Can you expand on that?
Well, it was just a strange coincidence. I was a lawyer, mostly with civil and family law, so I have no previous experience, nor am I educated in filtration. But I went to see this exhibition with my kids that was touring my town, and it was the first time I actually saw pictures of microfibers, and that are coming from washing machine, and how they, like which we were talking basically at the beginning, because you don't know, you just wear clothes, you wash them, you have no idea you pollute. And then at the same time, I had this project going on professionally. A factory had some problems with discharge of gray water, so I made some filtration specialists, and basically it just happened. We started talking about it, and if simple filters could prevent that, and we started doing some very early trials. It was like an after-school project. It was really something, that really interested me, that light out my heart, I guess. And and we saw theoretically that it would be possible to stop it. And then we made our first prototype. And I wrote to Maria Vesta, who was the founder of the Planet Exo Foundation, because she was looking for filters. And, I had nothing. I just found her email and I wrote to her and I said, hey, I read an interview that, you're looking for filters for washing machines. We don't have anything fancy, but we have this first prototype and we think it's possible. And she wrote to me, like, in the same evening, she said, Fine, we'll come and see in 3 days. And this really changed it because, she really helped us in the organization. She made us believe that we could really do this. Of course, she said we need to, to have scientific tests, and we need to have, proper design and engineering done. But, from then on, I said, okay, we have something. We know it's feasible. Let us do this. So we did it.
That's so cool. That's really exciting. And can you explain a little bit how the filter works, how your service works?
Oh, right. Like I can basically show it. So
Nice.
we have this filter here. I know if it's visible. And you attach it to any washing machine on the outside. So it's an external part. It's an accessory to a washing machine. And then you basically just unscrew it. And there's a cartridge inside, similar to a Brita water filter. And so every 20 washes or every month or so, it depends a little bit on one wash, you just exchange it. So this one is new and this one is dirty. This is how it looks when it's dirty, and it catches the fibers. And then you basically just exchange it, you unscrew it, and press that. Then the whole idea, it's really simple. The installation takes about 5 minutes, not more. It's relatively simple, and we have now a new model coming up. Maybe a sneak preview. It's nicer, and it will have even more user-friendly features than this one, because this one was sort of an MVP. But now we developed our own design, and we're going to go in our own production because we see that the market is there, the awareness is rising, and people really want to do this. So now we're confident we can invest in our own design.
That's awesome. And I must say, I do not have your filter yet, but I have
We've changed that quite a lot today.
I have a slightly more rudimentary solution. I have the filter bag. And something I always, I have to say, I always felt uncomfortable. I always feel is on how what to do with the fibers on the corners when I open the bag, I take the clothes off, and I'm always like, it feels strange to just throw it away, even if I don't know if I go into put it into recycling of plastic, but sometimes I look at it and I think it's probably a lot of fibers that are cotton here as well. So,
Dark, and everything that comes from washes, detergent, like those. So there's really a lot of it's a difficult mix. It's to put in the right bin, but yeah, plastic would be, I guess, the best. But it really just depends on the country. I'm not that familiar of how this is regulated in Portugal, but some countries really incinerate the waste, and that's probably the best option given that the proper filters are in place. But other, they just end up in landfill again. And then you imagine these little microplastics, and then the wind blows and they're all over again. So you did nothing. And in most cases, it still gets re-released if you don't take care of it. Indeed.
But I think you guys designed a solution that's completely circular, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I remember seeing that you can recycle the cartridges, but also the fibers caught.
Yeah, we actually recovered the cartridges. So, what, yeah, I mean, there isn't a 100% perfect solution, but we really tried to do the best we can. So, I feel that just capturing the fibers is the first step. But, like you said, what happens then? Okay, you caught them, but now you need to do something with them, and you must absolutely prevent re-release of them. And the way we do it is we collect cartridges back and we wash in a controlled environment all durable parts. So all durable parts are washed and cleaned and sent out again. But this part inside, the filter medium with the fibers and everything you already told me you have in your bag, this is our quote here. And this is the part we recycle. For now, we're storing the material, but we have some very promising solutions for chairs and tables and, for furniture. So we're going to get the first prototype from our material, probably in a few weeks. But there's also, of course, you can always use this material for installation mats. We want to do something meaningful, maybe an object that you use or you can see. So, you know, it spreads the story and the awareness. You need to do installation mat, okay, it's good, but it's hidden.
Yeah.
If you do like a chair or a table or something, then, you know, the story goes on, you spread it around.
That's brilliant. Yeah. You can look at it and be like, this is all of my closet.
Kind of exactly. Like, oh, this is all in my coffee table, not in you.
Exactly. That's a really cool solution. It's great. It's really important for us to make every business nowadays a circular one. So
yeah, I mean, of course, you know, there's the logistic footprint. We try to use only ground shipping and we only use carriers and do offsetting. But still, we need to grow. And when we, you know, grow and when we have at least 5,000 customers in one postal code, then we design local refurbishing units. Mm-hmm. So ideally, we would have, I don't know, one in Porto, one in Munich, one in Ljubljana. So basically, wherever we would have a community of at least 5,000 users, we would have a local unit. So we wouldn't ship in back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the idea, but you have to come to that point economically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And besides using a filter in our washing machines, do you have any tips on how we as consumers can reduce or even prevent the release of microplastics?
Well, definitely. Always wash full loads.
Mm.
Because the vibration is lower. Wash full loads. Really wash when you need to wash, because nowadays I think people just tend to, you know, you wear it once and then you wash it. I mean, no need really.
Yeah.
So, you know, think about your washing brand. Do I really need to wash that often? And when I do full loads, of course, think about the materials your clothes are made of. I'm not saying we should all go get cotton or, you know, wool. I don't even think it's possible. I think plastic has a necessary space in fashion, in clothing, like billion people. I mean, there's just no way of doing that with a purely natural material. But still, you know, if you can just read the labels, think a little bit about that as like maybe fail in with more for a piece of clothing, love it for longer. Mm-hmm. These are all steps that don't really hurt, but, you know, at the end, they make a huge impact. I think just, you know, sometimes just being aware of things and thinking about it automatically directs you to more sustainable practices.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you're not only providing a solution for home machines, right? But you also provide the solution for a larger scale for commercial and industrial filters, right? So how has the industry's response been to your filters?
Well, good actually.
Okay.
I think the impact we can make there, of course, is larger because these machines, of course, have high capacities. And also they run 24/7, like in hospitals, in hotels. It's really important that we take that into consideration, that we take that into equation and try to do something. It's more demanding in the book because the water flow and everything is just really large. So it's really large scale machines. It has nothing to do with this concept here. So it's a different technology. Actually, I'm happy to say that we started working with a few hotels that hopefully, you know, we will be introducing to chains. We have some UN projects going on. We have one in Ivory Coast. We have one in Sri Lanka, which hotels trying to be sustainable. We're talking with the Maldives government. So, you know, because in these islands, it's all the more important, because they don't have really great wastewater treatment system or none at all. So it's important we do something to preserve what environment and really gives them living. So this is a project going on, and also fashion industry. I must say that fashion industry is a bit, they don't really want to own the problem in terms of, you know, going directly to consumer, but they are very interested in doing something in their supply chain. So going to industrial and commercial filters is a way to address their supply chains and to minimize the release of microfibers in the process.
Which is great, because it just means you're going kind of to the source where the clothes are produced, and so you stopped initially. I mean, we all know that the fashion industry has deals with a large use of water, and just thinking of the dyeing process, and if you could install those types of filters on the machines and doing those processes, I think a lot of the initial release would be contained. So
yeah,
great solution.
It's a really good thing. And also, you know, how often the buyer is the one who sets conditions. So, you know, we installed one microfiber, large scale microfiber filter in India, simply because their buyer, a Dutch company, insisted that there's a filter installed on the facility in India. Otherwise, they won't buy, you know, certain products that were made there. So I think it comes from the, often comes from the buyer's perspective or initiative, not necessarily from the factory in these countries that, you know, usually cannot even afford sustainable practices. So I think we need to work hand in hand with supply chain, buyers, producers, you know, to optimize.
Yeah, and I think that extends to the fashion industry in general. All these changes that need to be implemented in the supply chain, they come sometimes, as you said in this case, from pressures, not exactly from the company that needed to change, but from the people that buy from it. And yeah, I think that's a general thing, that we have to put pressure. Brands have to start asking more questions to their suppliers and really demanding that things be done correctly.
Because it's the brand's identity at the end of the day. You stand by it, but you need to know what's happening in the background. But also, we as consumers, I think we have to vote with our euros, dollars, whatever. You know, we also need to say, okay, this is what I feel comfortable with. These values are okay, and these are not. So, you know, I'm just going to buy that, and I'm not going to buy this. So that's why I just read the thing I showed you, your webpage. Yeah, I didn't know it. I'm sorry, but it isn't your brand. And, you know, I Googled it immediately. I said, wow, finally clothing that my daughter would love, my teenage daughter. And they were like, hey, look, because I had this continuous fight with her that I would not buy that because, you know, it's just, it's just not something I can support. And I said, okay, finally a brand that was attractive to young women.
That's awesome. Yeah, and even us, we do make a lot of strides, and we're doing a lot of research on how we can do better, besides just, you know, the materials that we use. But I mean, it's an industry that has a lot of issues, and we all have to keep pushing forward for more solutions every day, and to be able to transform this into a circular, we're really, really looking into how we can recycle our clothes and get clients to, whenever the clothes are past damaged, that they can give us back, and how we can find solutions also to repair, because it's really crucial for us to be responsible for the products that we produce and put out. Yeah,
but like you said, you know, it's an ongoing process. You're doing better and better and better. You know, you can't just be perfect at the beginning. And this is, you learn, and the research is going on, and new technologies that are emerging. And I think it's just important that we strive to be better. But you can't be perfect, even in terms of sustainability. So I always say, sustainability is maybe even better, because sustainability is something that a lot of people can do.
And
being 100% sustainable, it's hard for some families, with, you know, for small steps. Because sometimes amounts to a bigger positive impact, even done by millions of people.
Yeah.
Or is it if you just try to do better and do a little, little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and yeah.
Yeah. And something that really got me excited is that I saw on your website that you helped pass legislation in France to make filters in new washing machines mandatory from 2025, right, onwards. How was this? And I must say congratulations, because it's a great achievement and it's something that has a real and a wide impact. How was this process?
Okay, we can't really own that. this was, of course, done by a great and powerful visionary at the time, Brune Poirson, and she introduced this bill. This bill has a larger, it's an anti-waste bill that has large proportions and deals with all sorts of environmental issues. Filters in washing machines are just one of the issues, just one article. But you see, it's very important for regulators to have a proof of concept, to see that it's possible, to see that it can be done, that it can be done for a reasonable price, and that it's user-friendly, that people can adopt it, because it's very hard to regulate something that the industry is saying it's not possible, mm-hmm. because then you have an issue. But we proved the industry wrong. We said, look, it can be done, and people are getting it. Using it, they're happy with it, and we have independent tests showing how efficient the filters are. You can just see the washing machine industry, of course. Some of them are still saying, you know, like the filters in machines are awesome, and we want profit from installing them. And I think we were the only one at the time, that's why they reached out to us, to basically have a company that have a product, they have a proof of concept sitting at the table, saying, look, it can be done.
Well, yeah. Can you maybe go to Brussels to just explain to the commission and make it mandatory for the entire European Union?
I think this is going to happen definitely, because it's also a spiraling effect. It's a snowball effect now. Because the awareness now is rising, and it reached a point, I think, where no government in Europe, or, you know, even in the Western world, would be able to not see the problem or to not do anything about it. And I think it will happen relatively fast in Europe, but you are saying we were just co-authoring a white paper that's about to go to Europe about the issue and what should be done, and about mandating those filters. So I think we're going to see it sooner than later, even in Europe.
Yeah, hope so. And having in mind all the current technologies and the ones that are still being developed, where do you think lies our best chance to eliminate microplastics from our oceans, the environment around us? I mean, I know this is a very wide question, but...
And yeah, I had to pose to somebody who's not really a technological genius. filters in washing machines are just one very simple example of what the technology could do to prevent a huge source of pollution. And then, of course, there's also a lot of technology could do in wastewater treatment plants at large, in cities. I mean, those technologies are there, and they're being further developed. The wastewater treatment plants nowadays are very modern. They call it the fourth generation. So, but the problem is not every city can afford them. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way we need to go also to really, you know, we need to go from the source to the end, and we need to just really make all the processes in between better up to the end before they reach our water supply. But also, yes, I mean, yeah, cosmetics is one such example. I think adding microplastics or microbeads to cosmetics for the peeling effect. I think this is also very ridiculous and should be forbidden. So all intentionally added microplastic to products, I think, and just should, it should just be forbidden, because you could substitute those with harmless natural materials. And there's a lot of plastic in your shampoo or in your conditioner, and even in detergents. I think, you know, we should just have regulation in place that prohibits intentionally and microplastic. So one very important second thing.
Yes, hopefully we'll move into that direction.
Yeah.
And now, to kind of end our conversation, I would like to ask you a bit more personal questions. So what is a book or a movie or a documentary that you love and would recommend?
I thought about that today when I was reading your question, and I don't know, two came to mind, I guess. My octopus teacher, I don't know if you saw that.
It's
a really beautiful Netflix documentary from this filmmaker who befriends an octopus, and she really teaches him about, you know, connection we have to animals, even to, you know, how to have better relationship with humans for him. I think it's a really beautiful movie, and inspiring and warming, and especially, you know, if you're close to the ocean. And then when we started to talk, and when you were saying about this trash and coming to you to the shores of Portland, it's not as it's not as inspiring as my octopus teacher, but there's this German documentary, the Nord Drift. It's basically about two guys, two friends, who are living on the north of Norway, and one in Germany, I think in Dresden, got a little bit. And it's about they decide to track how trash comes from Germany to the Arctic Circle.
Wow.
They put like a GPS tracker on it, and they make it a little bit more sophisticated. And in the end, they actually see that something that you discharge in Dresden actually reaches the Arctic Circle. So this is like, I think it's a learning, the teaching story about how we think that something we dispose of it here, but it ends up, you know, pretty south.
And who is someone now that inspires you?
Oh, I have to be Sylvia Rome. I met her a few occasions. She's a tiny lady, but she's just remarkable, and she's an excellent scientist, a great communicator, and she's really inspirational, I think. I always remember she was since without blue, there's no green. Mm-hmm. And if the oceans die, we die. And she's, it's just very inspiring whenever you hear her talk.
I don't know much about her, but I will definitely check.
Yeah, look, she's, I don't know, I really don't know how old she is. She must be in her 80s or even more, but she still dies every day. It's just phenomenal.
Well, so nice. And can you leave us with a curiosity about you that people might not know?
Well, I mean, people don't know much about me anyway, but I guess I'm very stubborn, and I like a challenge, and, you know, I rarely take no for an answer. But this proved to be a very good thing in this issue, because I had doors slammed in my face more often than not at the beginning, but somehow I just kept going and going, and now we see after 5 years, we see the first fruits of our labor.
That stubbornness is just resilience that you have, and that persistence, yeah. Right? That's great.
Probably, I'm trying to really be focused on this mission. And, you know, in the beginning when I was at first, we started with the toner filter to go into the washing machines. You know, we never thought about these toners. So we thought, develop a filter, and we would go to a washing machine producer, and naively, I thought they would be thrilled. They would say, oh, great. But it was not like that. When I talked with the board member of a large washing machine producer, he told me that maybe my love for the oceans would be best served if I just adopted the old thing.
You know? No.
And this was so, you know, but it really kept me going. And, you know, I had that room, and, you know, I was a woman in a very men-oriented industry or technical. So the purpose, the story, you know, but we decided to change it, and we did. Oh, they have to do it.
Exactly. That's a good turnaround story. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. And if you want to learn more about our guests and some of the topics discussed, check out the info we left in the description. If you like the episode, do subscribe. You'll find out when new episodes are released, and it will also help other people get to the podcast, which wouldn't it just be amazing to spread the word on sustainability and reach more people? Yeah, we'd love that. So there's really nothing left for me to say, then thank you again for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode.